Hello, this is Jerry Gilbert with my first submission for Blind Call Tech. I wanted to add a little to the discussion that's been going on about owner-trained guide dogs. I'm currently training my own dog. He's called Charlie, he's 15 months old, and he is a Labrador Poodle cross. Some people may know this as a Labradoodle. And I think I will refer to him from now onwards as a Labradoodle. He's quite a large dog, probably about 23 inches at the shoulder, and quite slim. He's more the build of the standard poodle rather than the chunkier build of a Labrador. I've had him since he was 7 weeks old and taken him through the puppy training stage, and I also, like Lisa was mentioning, had difficulty with the housebreaking or house training phase, and we took some time to get over that, but happily now, he's all house trained and reliable. He is quite a boisterous dog, and this presents a few problems. His behaviour around the house is not fantastic, and we're working quite hard on that at the moment. It's an area that was slightly neglected, I think, by me, and almost assumed that he would just train himself to behave well, and that didn't really happen. With previous dogs that I've had, I haven't really come across the problems that I'm having with Charlie. He chews quite a lot still, but that's getting better, and it is very difficult to put all your possessions and things out of reach of a dog who's got the chewing bug, and he finds things that I think I've locked away and are completely out of his reach, and I return and find that he's chewed, you know, one of my most prized possessions. But I think we're getting over that stage now. He's maturing now and starting to become a little calmer. So what we'll do now is I'll go out for a walk with Charlie, and you can hear how I work with him and how well he's doing. And then I'll discuss some of the techniques that I've used to train him and some of the equipment that I'm using, harnesses, etc. And also I will give some information about the material that I have read to do with dog training, and more specifically to do with guide dog training. Okay, it may be a little bit windy, but I'm in the driveway now of my house, and with Charlie. Sit, good boy, wait, and we're off for a little walk. Forward, I'm just giving him the command. You will note that I use quite a lot of voice commands at the moment. Good boy, keep going. And quite a lot of verbal praise. Straight on. Good boy. We're going to walk a little block route. Quite simple. Good boy. Find the way through. Good lad. And today is rubbish collection day. Now, quite a lot of wheelie bins out on the street, so this is a good day for working training. Charlie has to think a bit today to get me around these wheelie bins. He's just having a shake. Straight on, good boy. That's it. So this is a route that doesn't really include many road crossings. Well, one in fact, and that's a very quiet one. But the roads are actually, one road's relatively busy. I live outside Cambridge, in a village called Fulbourn. Keep going, Charlie. Straight on. Good boy. Keep going. Well done. On you go. That's it. And this village is about 5 miles from Cambridge, to the south. Keep going, Charlie. That's clever. And I'm giving him the verbal praise here. He's a bit confused by me talking as we're walking, because I don't usually do so much talking. And we're coming up now to the first road crossing. Up to the curb. Up to the curb. Good boy. Well done. Say hello. Have a sniff of the microphone. Good lad. Wait. Forward. Good boy. So I'm using really the British guide dog commands from Guide Dogs for the Blind. We're going past dogs in gardens now. Keep going, Charlie. So it's this potential distraction here. It's working quite nicely this morning. Come on, come on. Keep going. Just having a look at a doggy, I think. That's it. Straight on. The more we get into this, the less I'll need to give him verbal commands. I'm using hand signals for all of these commands as well. We're going to take a left turn here. Just coming up to it now, and Charlie's automatically done it. There is no choice really at that point, but and we're going to take another left turn in 20 yards. And there is a choice here. Sometimes we go straight on. So let's see how it works. Left. Left. Good boy. Good lad. Straight on then. Keep going. And executed superbly that left-hand turn. Straight on, boy. Now this is quite a busy road. Pedestrian wise it isn't, but there's a lot of traffic on this road. It's a main road through this village, and it's the village of Fulbourn. I think I may have mentioned that, I'm not sure though. That's spelled Fulbourn, and it's, as I say, about 5 miles south of Cambridge. Straight on. Keep going. Well done. That's it. Main features of this village is that was a large psychiatric hospital here for many years. In fact, it's still semi-functional. And the other feature that's of interest is there is a windmill here, which was a corn grinding mill. I think it actually stopped working in about the 1930s. And it fell into a state of disrepair, but is now, it's being restored really over the last few years. Keep going. Good boy. Straight on. On you go. This is working very well actually. Right. So we're actually walking up towards the mill at the moment. And It doesn't actually grind corn at the moment. It's more designed, I think, to be a little tourist attraction. The restoration work that's going on there. Straight on. Good boy. And I've been into the mill just to see what goes on. It's not really open all the time, it's restored by volunteers. And it's on one of the few hills in Cambridgeshire. It's a very flat county. And this hill, which we're walking up now, I think hill is a slight exaggeration. It's a slight rise. Maybe a bit of wind noise here. And we're going to make a left turn in a moment. Here we go. Charlie's just done that on his own. So we always come this way. We can't go any other. But you can walk past the turning, so he has to actually find it. So we've turned off the main road now. And we're coming into a residential area, really a housing estate, called Hunt's Mill, which is right next to the windmill, which is now on our right-hand side. More wind. It's a good place to have a mill, a windmill. Keep going, Charlie. Up to the curb. Up to the curb. Sit. Good boy. Well done. And we stopped here at a drop curb. And well done, Charlie. Just giving him a bit of praise for doing that. I'm going to do a left-hand turn now. And get that wind blowing a bit. I've got no screen on the microphone. Wait. Left. Good boy. Keep going then. He's working nicely this morning. He's got to work hard here because there are cars parked on the pavement and bins that have been left out for collection. Has to negotiate those. I'm a bit out of breath after walking up that hill. I am also an asthmatic, and I'm feeling it a bit this morning. So, forgive me for heavy breathing. That's not good. We just clipped a bin, which it's difficult this for him. Sit. Good. He only kind of brushed that. My coat just caught that. So we're going to try that again. I've taken him back. And we're going to go round it properly, aren't we, Charlie? Forward. Good boy. That's better. Well done. Good boy. I have used the clicker to teach the obstacle avoidance quite a lot. One of the things about that is that, of course, at some point you have to withdraw the clicker from the process, which is what we've been doing, really. So that can be a point that you do get some little brushes, I guess. There's the thought that I'm not getting a treat, or I am going round this obstacle to get to the treat, can blur the actual behaviour. Again, we're walking nicely, we're avoiding. We've been between quite a lot of these bins and cars. when they coincide. It's a little bit windy, so not sure how much of this you're hearing. And we're coming round back on now, back onto the street where I live now. So we have walked really in a large rectangle. One end of the rectangle is narrower than the other, so sort of like a triangular walk, but with the pointed end. It's been flattened out, and there's all. Here we go. I'm going to start asking him to find my gateway now for our house. He's good at this, and I just say find the house and point at it. And it's always good to finish on a positive note when you've been for a walk. Good boy. Find our house. Find the house. Oh, what a clever dog. What a good boy. Now there's an overhead obstacle here which Charlie is stopping for. Good boy! Well done. That's good. And as I say, good to finish on a positive. Good boy. Clever lad. Aren't you good? And he's just shaking out. Because that's, although not very difficult really for him, he's had to think about that today because it's different. Normally there aren't bins out, just once a week, so it's a slightly different dynamic to normal. So he always has a good shake after bin day, don't you? Good boy. And we just send him down into our back garden here to relieve himself. Off you go. Good boy. Quick. And he's going to do that just to empty his bladder. And he's back, in fact. Didn't want to. Head in. Good boy. And that was the walk with Charlie. Okay. We're back now. And Charlie is sitting at my feet. I don't think he's going to make any noise, actually, so you won't hear him for this section. Before training Charlie, I read quite extensively through various dog training books and books on dog training theory and the different methods, and I have used clicker training for quite a lot of Charlie's guiding training, and that's gone very successfully. Clicker training can be a really fast way of teaching, and once the dog has got the idea, once you have charged the clicker, that's the process of making the dog aware that the click means he has to do something before the treat is given. Once you have made that association, you can build behaviour quite quickly. And I used it, for example, for teaching Charlie to guide me around stationary obstacles. This happened quite naturally, really, that he avoided the obstacles himself. And it was just a case of, well, I suppose making him think that he was a bit wider than he is and a bit taller than he is, so that he always gives me the space around things now. You will have heard, whilst we were out on the walk, we walked into a bin, a wheelie bin. Now this was an interesting, I revisited the wheelie bin after we finished our walk. I just walked around to that area with my cane and looked at the position of the wheelie bin. And what I think happened was that these bins, they're rubbish bins with all the trash, etc., that are collected every week. And they're standing out on the pavement, but the shape of them is interesting. They're tapered, and the foot of the bin is narrower than the top of the bin. Now, what I think happened was I caught my left coat sleeve on the top of the bin, and the bin was on the pavement with the drop curb on my right hand side. So Charlie was keeping me away from the curb that was dropping down, so I didn't fall off that, and he was walking very close and tucked in to the edge of the bin. And because it tapers, he can get right close to the bottom side of the bin, but my arm is sticking out, I suppose you could say, and catching the top of the bin, because it's tapered, the top of the bin sticks out further. So he was actually trying to keep me away from the obstacle of the curb drop, but because of the shape of the bin, this didn't quite work properly. It sounded, when I listened back to the tape, it sounded as if I gave that bin really a hard crunch, but I didn't really. I just caught it with my coat and it tipped slightly, and that's why it made that big banging noise. Okay, let's go on now to talk about the equipment that I'm using. I'm using a leather harness that I had made by a local harness maker. She normally makes harnesses for horses who are pulling carts, and she does quite a lot of work with disabled riders, and so she was a perfect person to just design this harness for me. I use a handle which I had made by a friend of mine, really, who works within a small engineering company, and it was quite a simple process for him to bend the handle into shape. He used 6mm mild steel and bent that into shape for me, and then welded some trigger clips to the end of it. I then got this covered with a chrome finish, and I got that through a company that normally do chrome work on vehicle parts. It cost quite a lot. We're talking around the £100 mark, so it's quite an expensive item. There are places where you can get harnesses made via the internet, and one of them that I was looking at is called LDS Leather. That's L for Lima, D for Delta, S for Sierra, leather.com, www.ldsleather.com. And they seem to have quite a range of harnesses. My harness is in the style of the UK Guide Dogs for the Blind Association harnesses. It's very similar. So going on to the books that I have read to kind of inform me, really, I read a number of books by an author called John Fisher, who's from the UK. He has actually died now, and his books are interesting. They are positive training books. He uses a positive training method. However, he doesn't use a clicker or a sound cue that in the way that Debbie was demonstrating. He uses his voice as the sound cue, really. And he does use treats. His first book was called Think Dog, and really was an exploration of the origins of the modern dog. His next book was called Dog Wise. This book I really liked. John Fisher took a German Shepherd at 10 months that had had no training really, and trained it using positive training techniques, to the Home Office standard for police dogs in the UK here. And he takes you all the way through the very beginnings of meeting the dog and the handler that was going to work with this particular dog, and all through the training methods that he used to get it up to the standard for police work. Along the way, he kind of relates a lot of the techniques that he's using to training a house pet, really. And it is really a very interesting book. Again, he's not using the clicker technique, but very similar methods, I would say. He does have the belief about the pack leader. Some of those ideas, I think, have now really changed. And the third book by John Fisher is called Why Does My Dog? And that explores, really, some of the dog behaviour that we as humans don't really find desirable. And it gives ideas on how to overcome problem behaviours. And that also is an interesting book. Okay, other books are Harnessing Thought by Bruce Johnston, which speaks really about guide dog training. In a way, it speaks more about the way that a guide dog thinks, or a dog thinks that's guiding someone. Let's put it like that. And that's quite a good book to get some ideas from. The Eyes That Lead by Michael Tucker is also an interesting book, written by a former guide dog trainer. And this book, I think, was originally written in the 1980s, and it goes through the more traditional ways of training a dog. And that's really all from me for this cast. I will probably return with more information and more chat about Charlie. If anyone would like to contact me via email, my email address is Jerry, J-E-R-R-Y, Gilbert, G-I-L-B-E-R-T, at ntlworld.com. That's Jerry Gilbert at ntlworld.com. Thanks for listening.